It's The Bill Murphy Show. A daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
And now here's your digital broadcast for Monday, January 15th, 2011. Did I say 15th? I meant 17th. Monday, January 17th, 2011. As we are more than halfway through the first month of this new year, is already continuing to fly by. Brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack with fresh Florida seafood, gigantic fishbowl, drinks, and live music. All in Beach Place on A1A in the heart of Fort Lauderdale Beach. Beautiful setup down there on Fort Lauderdale Beach lately. They have the 100th anniversary sign all lit up there at the corner of Las Olas and A1A. And Fort Lauderdale Beach is happening once again. Folks, as we bring you another interesting guest, we say that everybody's got a story, and I'm sure our guest for today does. Joining me by telephone from somewhere in South Florida, we'll find out specifically, Bone Lee Tadpole. What's going up, Bone Lee?
Good morning. Good morning.
You, my friend, you're one of those multifaceted people. We're going to get into the details of all of it, but first and foremost, we're going to talk about your product, and wow, I don't have the exact name of it in front of me, but you have the Bone Lee Tadpole Hot Sauce, and it's you're kind of really making a name for it lately. What got you into the hot sauce business to begin with?
You know, that was real easy. Growing up, my mother, grandmother, grandfather, both sides, always had a farm. And they were always making, you know, chow chow or making, you know, some type of crazy relish or something hot. And as I got older, going out to dinner, I was having a hard time finding good places to eat and finding good hot sauce.
Okay.
And as a kid, I enjoyed the hot stuff, the hot peppers, whatever, and I would always get, for Christmas, birthday, whatever, I would always get a bottle of hot sauce as a gift. Always.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. At one point, I had the whole side of the refrigerator and the door just lined up with just different types of hot sauces.
Wow.
And I started blending them back and forth, tweaking a little bit, making it my own, and got to the point to where people, friends, and family just would ask me, hey, can you make me a batch of that stuff you were making? Can you, you know, make one for me, you know, just a little hotter, a little less, whatever. And when I was playing in the band, I would sell the hot sauce with the band, and the restaurants that I was playing at were like, hey, man, you need to make this stuff legal.
Wow. So most bands go out and play and sell CDs after the gigs, but you were out there selling hot sauce.
Well, if I sell enough hot sauce, I can go up to Davidson County, Nashville, and make me a CD.
There you go. Awesome.
I'm going backwards with it.
All right. Yeah, so this is where it gets interesting, though. They tell you, can you get this stuff marketed and legal and sell it to us?
Yeah, I was playing at a popular place down off the riverfront, and just selling the bottles, playing every Sunday or every other Sunday during their brunch.
Wow.
Just me and my 12-string and just selling hot sauce, and it just, in other places, venues I played at, everybody kind of knew me. You know, they knew me a little bit from the band, but they really knew the hot sauce. When I made my own labels, I was buying all the bottles off the internet. I was doing everything myself, just killing myself, basically. And people remembered the hot sauce. They didn't really remember the music, but they remembered the hot sauce.
Very funny. So wait a minute. So wait, back up a second and get into the details of how did you make the transition from just putting some sauce together that was a combination of some of your favorites to actually manufacturing one that was a creation, an original creation of your own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I
was purchasing the raw materials off the internet, and one of the raw materials I was using is called Satan's blood.
Ooh.
And I looked on the label, and it said it was made here in Riviera Beach.
Wow. Okay.
So I was like, well, how fortuitous is this? I look at it, and I go, well, let me just give this guy a call. Well, come to find out, it's Sauce Crafters is who makes it. And a guy named Charlie runs Sauce Crafters. And I told him what I thought about doing, told him what I was doing. And he just said, come on up, let's have a meeting. And then a year and a half later, after setting up Hot and Tasty LLC, having the labels tweaked, yeah, I actually had to start paying attention to what I was making. I had to use a digital scale and start measuring out everything. That's when it became work.
Right, 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 right.
And voila, you know, after a little money and a little time, here comes the hot sauce.
All right, and this is one variety of hot sauce. This is your gourmet hot sauce, and it's the way it is. You don't have any varieties of it at this point. It's just this one flavor, one strength.
That's legal through the FDA, yes.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, that's...
I have all sorts of different sauces, but each sauce has to have its own little seal of approval by the FDA, and it has to have, everything has to be tweaked perfectly, and it will be coming soon. But I have a weaker sauce, which is the same cayenne-based, that I make for, like, my grandfather, and kids like the weaker stuff. And then I have a hotter sauce, which is the same cayenne-based, which is what I personally use.
Okay, but the one that you have on the market now would be considered somewhere in the medium neighborhood?
That's how we got the name Original.
Gotcha.
So just the gourmet, because when I took my sauce to Sauce Crafters, Charlie said, it's way too hot. He goes, you'll never breach the market. You're going to burn everybody.
Okay.
He goes, let's tone it down. He really helped me out a lot, kind of, you know, point me in the right direction. And he just said, hey, let's tone it down a little bit. We'll set this out. We'll make your brand first. Then we'll start feeling out, you know, what the demand is and what the demand is for, and we'll go from there.
Right, that'll help you make a decision on whether the extra hot one is the next one or the even milder one is the next one. That's
sure.
Pretty smart move.
Absolutely.
I'm taking it from what you're saying, your personal preference is the scorching hot stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm working on a smoked habanero that I literally smoke these peppers on the grill overnight, 12 hours overnight, and it'll blow your mind. It'll just burn you for hours, it seems like. But, yes, I prefer the extreme heat.
I'm intrigued by something you said a couple of minutes ago. You said that in order for it to get on the market, it has to pass stringent tests and approvals by the FDA. Now, first of all, that's very reassuring, I'm sure, for myself and a lot of people to hear that, you know, someone that's creating a new food product really has to go through a lot of hoops to get it to happen, because I mean, at least there are some standards out there that we have to meet. Not that you know, not that all food that's on the market is, you know, actually good for us, but it's good to know that they're at least keeping an eye on something. Now, can you get a little specific on what sort of standards they make you manufacture the stuff by?
I don't understand it myself. I just had to produce a batch and send it to them. They send back my approved label. They give me the nutrition information that's on the side.
Uh-huh.
And it's a yay or nay type thing.
Now, when you say the nutritional information, do you have to measure stuff like the amount of sodium and how many?
No, that's what they do. That's exactly what they do. They do a shelf test to make sure, to see, I mean, see how long it'll last. I mean, my product is a very stable product. It's just vinegar and peppers. It's not like a fish dip or something that could really, you know,
have
deteriorate
something
quickly. So
right.
For me, I didn't have to do a lot. There wasn't a lot for me. I just had to pay them some money, send them a few, you know, samples, and then they just sent back the nutrition information and went on. If you make less than, I don't know what the amount is, but if you make less than X amount of gallons a year, you don't even have to go through the FDA. And that's like your stuff you see at the farmers markets, or you'll see the little, you know, sandwiches or cookies that are wrapped up at the gas station.
Yeah, wrapped up in cellophane.
See, and but if you want to be recognized on a national or global scale, you have to go through the FDA and you have to go through GS1 to get your barcodes and all that great stuff. That's not fun and not creative.
And for those of you listening that want to get a hold of this stuff, they can get on your I'm forgetting where the website is.
It's
Tasty.
It's Hot and Tasty LLC is the company.
Right.
And hotandtastyllc.com.
Okay, there you go. And you get on there and there's information on how you can order your own bottle. If you're in South Florida, it's as easy as sending an email to Bonely. And if you're outside of the area, there's PayPal procedures there that you can go through. And we'll make sure that we have the links set up on our page there properly so you can order while you're listening. I wish I had some here to sample while I was talking to you so I could give people an audible description of what it tastes like. But we'll follow up on this at another date. Now you're a fellow music guy. You talked a little bit about doing the music. What's your music background and how involved in music are you today?
Growing up, my father He started playing guitar when he was a kid. And so when I was a kid, my father played bass in a band. And as a kid, I had the opportunity to go with him to the trailer parks or to, you know, to corporate functions, whatever. I thought everybody's dad was in the band.
Ah, very good.
I just grew up going, you know, my dad's in the band. What band is your dad in?
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I felt the same way. My parents were both musicians, so I think I just assumed that everybody, you know, sat around the piano and sang or played guitars and growing up as kids. But then, you know, then I figured out later that that's not really the case.
No, it's not the case. And, you know, the neighbors would get together and they'd all jam and us kids would just kind of just dance around. And, you know, that's how we had fun. But growing up, the music was there, and I found myself writing lyrics and songs at a young age. And I didn't play anything. I actually wanted to be a drummer. And then I was playing trumpet in school and everything, and then I was 13 years old, and the old man and I went to the AC/DC concert in 1985, Fly on the Wall.
Ooh.
And the only reason I got to go was because my uncle didn't make it. There was two tickets. My uncle didn't make it, so Dad said, "Come on, Justin, let's go." And I was like, "All right, let's go."
Oh, wow!
And the next morning, I'm like, no sleep. I'm like the only kid in the whole school with the T-shirt. I'm still asleep, and I'm thinking to myself, "That's what I want to do. That's it. I'm done." You know. And I told him the next day, "I'm ready to start learning." He used to ask me, you know, "If you want to learn, let me know." He never pushed me on it. He just said, "If you want to learn, let me know." And the next morning, I said, "Dad, I'm ready."
That's fun. That's cool. Because you know every musician has a day that they just turned their lives around, that they went, okay, this is what I want to do. I think mine was when I saw Peter Frampton at Madison Square Garden in 1977 or so.
Holy smokes.
But yeah, actually, you know what's oddly enough, the band that opened for them was a little-known band called AC/DC that no one had ever heard of from Australia. And I saw that,
wow,
that set. That was pretty crazy. But then, so yours was an AC/DC concert, and where did it go from there? You got a couple of bands together in the last couple of decades, right?
Yeah, just doing little stuff here and there, and as I've played and gotten to get a better feel of myself, I've found out that the band thing is really difficult to do, especially down here in South Florida. I can't find a banjo player or a lap steel guitar player for my kind of music down here to
right.
save my life. But
yeah.
I've found it better now that I just now that I do these jams, I usually do it with just my 12-string,
uh-huh.
and play it. I'm writing all the time. And I play with some fellas over at their practice pad. But when I was gigging out, it was the Bonely Tadpole Band, and I got all the gigs. It was my PA. I hired the guns. All the guys that would show up would come for $100, $150. We never practiced. You know, these were all gigs from really good players. But it wasn't like a band. There wasn't anything really creative. It was just the same songs, the same standards. And it became, you know, some money on the weekends, but I wasn't feeling, you know, I wasn't really enjoying it.
You weren't fulfilled.
Yeah. Well, and even now I've played with a few people and, they'll call me up and say, "Hey, can you play Thursday night or can you play Friday night?"
Oh, cool.
And I'm like, "Yeah, I'll fill it in." And I have no idea what these songs are.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes on, I just find the key. And then I just go with it.
Something very exciting about that, too. I share that sentiment as well, being in this Nobody's Fault band that I've done in the last 15 years now or so. But we, you know, have never really practiced either. Just, you know, good cats, good talented cats. You just send a song or a song title and say, "Hey, learn this one time for the next gig." And then that surprise moment of going, "All right, here we go. 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's right.
We'll see what happens. It could be a train wreck or it could be awesome." And I love that element of surprise about it, you know?
Yeah, I enjoy that part a lot. And when you get hired and they say, "Okay, you know, we need you to you know, play 3 sets, 4 sets, whatever." It's like, "Okay, come on, let's do it." And it's just not creative enough and not fun. I really don't like getting there at 8 o'clock, setting up and leaving at 2:30.
Right.
You know, I would much rather play 45 minutes or an hour and a half of just my stuff and then go to the bar.
Yeah, yeah. Why, you know? Wouldn't we all? Hey, Bone Lee, this, just think about, you know, loading out at 4 a.m. at my age or setting up at 8 o'clock and then work until 4 a.m. That's, you know, that's why I'm sort of slipping into the semi-retirement from that business as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know how that feels. All right, so we know how unstable the music business is. We know that the Bone Lee Tadpole's original gourmet hot sauce is mostly a labor of love, a love of yours, but I'm sure you're managing to make a few bucks on it here and there. What is your quote-unquote day gig these days?
Oh, I run a residential and commercial maintenance company.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
When I was in college, I was the maintenance man for an 80-unit apartment complex. So, and I bartended at the bars at night, and I had no rent because I was the maintenance man.
Ah, there you go.
And so it was nice. There was a pool there, and just, you know, I just went to college in the mornings and the afternoons and bartended three nights a week and lived pretty nice. And I moved down to South Florida 10 years ago, and I realized half of these people can't even change a light bulb.
Yep.
And before you know it, I just started getting phone calls from hearsay, and that was back in 2003 when I was selling motorcycles for a Harley-Davidson dealership in Fort Lauderdale, and started doing some wood floors and just quit, you know.
Yeah.
Got out of the rat race and just quit.
Selling Harleys in South Florida doesn't seem to be a bad gig at all either.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, and they're all over the place. I would think a Harley salesman would do pretty well in South Florida.
If you want to be there at 7:30 every morning until 7 o'clock at night, 6 days a week, and okay. On your days off, if a customer wants to buy a Harley, and if you want to get that commission, you better show your ass up. I'm just not somebody that likes to be, you know, around all day long. I'm just not into it. I just, you know.
And as
it
we roll,
way too much work for me. Way too much standing around and trying to meet people and show them all the T-shirts because they were all from out of town anyway.
Right.
You know, but it was an experience. Put it that way, it was an experience.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Spoken like a true artistic type, just like me. I know how it is. I can't stand the 9-to-5, and I love having the different dynamic to every single day. I think that's what keeps things fresh. You know, so.
With my job, when a customer calls me up and has an issue with their home or their office, whether it's crown molding, you never know what you're getting into.
Right.
And you get there and they go, oh, can you fix that? And you kind of look and you say, you know what? I've never done that exactly, but I think we can work something out. You know, it's just everything is just, it's like flashcards. You never know what's coming. Just like we talk about the music. You never know what song's coming up next. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just jump in and do it, you know?
Yeah, no, who needs set lists? You got to take it song by song, you know what I mean?
You got to read the crowd.
No, people think that's a lazy man's way out, but I'm telling you, there's a science to it. You have to read the crowd and look and figure out what song you're going to do next, and there's a science and a skill to that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, all right, so let's we're talking to Bone Lee Tadpole, who is the curator, I guess that's the name, of the of his namesake hot sauce. Now, hot sauce, when I hear hot sauce, I immediately think wings. And I think I've been so particular about, you know, enjoying sauce on wings that I'm basically just having the sauce on the side. If the wings are nice and crispy and they're, you know, they might be just fine plain. And if the sauce is good enough, I'll just pour it on there. So in addition to wings, where do you find the most where have you found the most surprising, maybe not surprising, but the most beneficial results on other types of food? What are your favorite things to put the hot sauce on?
I'll tell you, my best customers are diners, and it's breakfast people.
Oh wow!
And the breakfast people going to work and eating breakfast at 6:30 in the morning is not the same crowd that's doing wings at 2 in the morning.
No, it's not.
Very different crowd.
Now, the wings at 2 in the morning crowd are asleep while these people are having breakfast.
Correct. And that is actually where the majority of my sauce goes, is to the hotheads, the people that just like hot sauce in general and keep it with them everywhere they go. But
so, for example, it would be a nice big plate of corned beef hash and eggs, and then you just sprinkle some hot sauce on there, and you're good to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And the most interesting thing is a gentleman who owns Quickie's Burgers and Wings out in Hollywood, which has fantastic burgers. Um, he he uses a few drops in his vodka.
Ooh.
And he used to buy, just skip the tomato juice.
Right.
He said he used to buy the pepper vodka. He got a hold of my hot sauce. And my hot sauce is not, when you say wings, my hot sauce is not like a wing sauce. My hot sauce is a gourmet hot sauce that you kind of blend in with your food.
I see.
The cooking sauce is really what it is, the best way I think I could put it.
Right.
It's not this vinegar table sauce that you see in all the restaurants.
I gotcha. All right. So
that's how we got the name, Hot and Tasty. It's hot. It'll burn you. I mean, it's warm, but it actually has a lot of flavor to it. Hot and Tasty is how we got that name. Mm. But, yeah, it's more of a gourmet sauce, but the wing stuff, that's all good. I put it on just about anything, but the vodka really threw me for a loop. And he made me. I was at an event with him. He had ordered some vodka, put some of my hot sauce in it, and he made me try it. He was like, "You got to try something." I'm like, "I don't know. I don't really do, hard liquor." "Oh, you got to try it. You got to just take a sip." And I took a sip. My lips were on fire. I was burning. And I was like, "Man, that's pretty good." And all the little chunks of cayenne pepper starts falling to the bottom. So you have this pulp at the bottom. That's just, I guess that's one real good last swig. I don't know. But
wow.
Vodka on the rocks and a little splash of bone leaves will get you going.
I'll have one of those right now, please, bartender. You see, you put the thought in my head. That's awesome. Now that being said, when you were talking about it being a gourmet sauce and it's not really intended for the wings, doesn't mean it won't work really well on a nice plate of wings as well.
No, it's fantastic. I actually blend it in with a little ketchup and a little butter.
I see.
And because you need something to stick to the wings.
Gotcha.
And a lot of times you get the hot wings and all the sauce at the bottom, and a lot of restaurants have complained about that. They're trying to find a perfect wing sauce, but the way you're doing it, I think, is appropriate. Get them naked,
yeah,
and then add the sauce, because the sauce that they have usually comes in gallon jugs. It costs the restaurant maybe $5-6. It's just this sodium, I don't know what they put in that stuff,
right?
And I don't trust it, and I don't really like it that much. But the way you're doing it, I think, is the way that a true hot sauce connoisseur would enjoy the hot sauce.
Well, don't call me a connoisseur. Just call me someone who's afraid to dive into a plate of wings that's been sitting in some sauce at the bottom of the plate for a long time. And, because the thing is, when you get an order of wings like that, you're committed. You're done. That's how it's going to taste. You have no say in the matter. This way, if you get them naked and then you do them on the side, you can adjust accordingly, and then halfway through, you've got it all figured out. So that's my method to it all there.
Mm-hmm, 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 absolutely. And if you ever go to Cheers up in Fort Lauderdale, they've got the hot sauce. And a lot of people, they do wings there all the time.
Yeah, they do. And you know what? I'm not to change the subject at all, but now that you mentioned Cheers, I'm going to go ahead and just put it out there that, in my opinion, Cheers, in this area, the best French fries you'll get anywhere. Not that that has anything to do with this conversation at all. I just thought I'd mention that. They have the good old-fashioned, plain French fries. None of this curly, blackened, all, newfangled way that people are figuring out how to do French fries. Man, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And you get a good French fry the way it's supposed to be at Cheers. So there you go, Cheers. You got your plug.
Yeah, there you go, Cheers. That's been my 4 a.m. destination for a while.
That's the plug that you deserve, you guys. So, Bone Lee Tadpole, what else is on the horizon? I know, in addition, you looks like the next step for you is to get another flavor maybe on the hotter side of the scale, and then maybe another one on the milder side of the scale, and that sounds to me like you're in the process of getting that done. But has this wet your whistle to get it more into the food manufacturing business, and you're going to expand the horizons a little?
Well, eventually, between my cousin and I, we'd like to have a brewery. He can brew fantastic beer, but that's way down the road, But I don't know that it would ever stop. I don't think that, because I make my own ranch. I make a lot of my own condiments. And I love to cook. And I really do, still to this day, I have a hard time going out to a restaurant and enjoying my food. It's just, I can do a much better job at home.
Well, you know what? I think that's because you're a product of growing up on a farm, and kind of, maybe it has a little bit to do with eating food the way it's supposed to be eaten. You know what I mean? You've had all the raw ingredients in front of you. You've you know, had home cooked meals that were fresh out of the ground, you know, within hours. So that probably spoils someone like you growing up and then going into all these various different fast food restaurants and modern day eateries. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's difficult. It really is difficult. But as far as anything else, launch anything else, I'm going to focus on the hot sauce. The hot sauce really, when I ask people if they like hot sauce, it's a yes and no black and white question. It's like, do you or don't you? If you don't, and they're kind of hesitant about it, yeah. I just leave them alone because my hot sauce is pretty warm.
Are you one of those guys that collects hot sauces? Do you have like a shelf of sauces you found from all over the world?
No. I've done that. They last for a little bit, and I've got sick of them. None of them are that good anyway, in my opinion. So when I do find one that I really like, first thing I do is pour it out on a plate, take it apart. I've got a microscope. I check everything out. I read the ingredients. I do everything to pick it apart and see what I can steal.
Okay. Now, briefly, in the short time we have left, you started off the interview talking about growing up on a farm. Is your family involved in farming at all to this day?
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't necessarily grow up on a farm. My grandfather raised tobacco up in the hills of Virginia, Tennessee, for all of the various tobacco companies.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, we had the tobacco growing on the fields. Now he quit. He no longer farms. He's too old to farm, but he rents his land out to people that grow other various products. But my mother, grandmothers on both sides, they always had a garden. Always.
Oh, right.
And still to this day, I have a garden. Even when I was in college, working at that little apartment complex, I had myself a little garden right there, you know?
Yeah.
Always growing stuff. People think I'm crazy, but man, I'll go out in the garden and sit there and just pull weeds and, you know, stay in the yard, drink beer, you know.
No, and there's also something very, very comforting about gardening as well. I haven't gotten into it myself, but I know that it's almost a spiritual experience for some people. They really, really get, you know, one with nature. You know?
Yeah, you're growing it yourself. You get to see them grow.
Yeah.
And if you put your hot peppers next to your oregano and your basil might get a little spicy.
Oh, how about that?
And it's just, I just enjoy growing my own stuff. And it comes back to growing up, you know, with home cooking. You know, you yank it out of the yard, you know?
Yeah.
Prep it, put it in a casserole, and serve it.
And you know exactly where you're getting it. It hasn't traveled by truck or plane or been preservatives added to it or anything like that. You know, it's right out of
the tomatoes down here are just as hard as softballs sometimes.
They just
drive me off the wall. They turn, they get them green, they gas them. Yeah. I could go on and on about the pesticide. You know, pesticides, they just don't know when to quit killing.
Oh, yeah.
I could go all day long about it.
Oh, yeah. No. Don't even get me started. The latest documentary that I've watched, since I'm just obsessed with watching documentaries on this subject, is Food Matters. This is one that was talking about how important it is to eat raw food or food as raw as you possibly can, because even supposedly healthy stuff that we buy in the produce section at stores has already gone through several processes that are messing us up. It's kind of a sad situation.
Yeah, I can't prove it, but I can just tell you it just tastes better to me.
Yeah, man. Well, you know what? I don't know if you're giving yourself enough credit there, Bonely. I think you know more about farming than you're claiming to, and I think you should take this thing all the way to where Bonely Tadpole Farms becomes a household name, man.
Oh, absolutely. I really want to have Bonely's Gourmet to be, when someone sees that on the shelf, they can purchase that with confidence and know it's not, you know, it's not going to be some off-brand of trash. Because honestly, there's only a few different people in the world that makes this, that makes, you know, like the ketchups, the mayonnaise. There's and then they do all the private labeling.
Right.
And when you go to get a private label, you either choose the cheapest stuff you can get, or you try to do like the gourmet stuff. And I guess that there's not that many different. I mean, there's a bunch of different products out there, but what's his name? What's the guy I'm thinking of? The actor used to then start racing cars. Paul Newman.
Oh, Paul Newman. Right.
When you saw Newman's face, whether it was on a bottle of ranch or a bottle of salsa, you knew it, and you still know that it's going to be good stuff.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
You know, and I want people to be able to look at my products and say, oh, well, if it's Bonely's Gourmet, then he's already, you know, as stringent as he is and as tight as he is, and careful, it's got to be good.
Yeah, and I think if anybody hears this interview and they can hear the sincerity in your voice and they can tell you're just a downright, you know, good old guy, man. There's a lot of trust to be gotten from that as well, and I hope that helps bring the sales of Bonely Tadpole's original gourmet sauce to the next level, my brother.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. It's really starting to catch on down in South Florida. It really is.
Yeah, and it continues to, and like we said, we have the links for you to get to his webpage where you can eventually order your own bottles of the sauce. If you're local, there's also instructions there on the website to where you can just email Bonely directly. We'll also put a link so you can try to become Facebook friends with him as well. He's a fun guy to follow on Facebook as well. Bonely, I appreciate your time, brother. I know we're taping ahead of time here on Saturday right before all the football action today. I know it's already after the fact when this is airing, but who are you pulling for this weekend?
My AFC team is the Steelers.
Oh, okay.
Growing up, we didn't have a team in Carolina. We had no team growing up.
Yeah.
I was a Steeler fan. I still am a Steeler fan. I am excited about the game today. I just really am. I've got money on all the games, but I'm excited about that game for sure.
That's going to be one hell of a battle there. I've jumped, since I'm a Cowboys fan, I've jumped on the Jets bandwagon for the weekend. So maybe we'll see a Jets-Steelers conference championship. Who knows?
I'm scared of Ray Lewis, though. Oh, I'm scared of him.
How could you not be?
I'm scared of the whole Ravens team, you know?
Well, let's hope the rest of the Steelers aren't scared of him as well. Enjoy the football this weekend, my brother, and good luck with continued success with the hot sauce, and we'll catch up with you and see how it's doing real soon.
Great. I appreciate you giving me the time and the opportunity. Thank you very much.
You got it. Hang on for 1 second so we can say goodbye. In the meantime, everybody tune in again tomorrow for a brand new show. Wednesday night is more original music at Lulu's starting at 8:30 p.m. And then Friday right here, another edition of Music Friday at BillMurphyShow.com. Catch you back here tomorrow, everybody.
Log on each weekday for another edition of The Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to Murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's MURPH@BillMurphyShow.com. A Murphonics Media Production.